Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 27 now?
Something like that. Yeah,
we're up there. We're catching up.
We're almost about to hit 100. Was it 100 listeners?
After the last week's episode, we had 99 as of yesterday. So one more person
out there who just listened to us with the 3-digit mark.
So those who did listen, who are listening because of our Starfest coverage and such, we do appreciate it. Yay. Hopefully you stick around. Hopefully we don't suck too bad or anything.
Not too bad.
So yeah, let's go ahead and talk about what came out in theaters this past weekend.
This past weekend in theaters, well,
crap and more crap.
Essentially, you had the movie that the Incredible Hulk trailer did not help, the new one from the director of The Descent, unfortunately, Doomsday. Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who with a whole cast of characters. Never Back Down.
Never Surrender.
That's right.
Okay.
And a limited release, if four people went and saw it, even though it's already one of the most controversial films of the year, the remake of Funny Games.
Yes. So do you want to talk more in depth about it, or do you think you covered Funny Games pretty well last week?
I think we talked about it last week enough. I'm interested that it didn't do very well over the weekend.
It didn't make a million. And even in remote, I mean, even if it was in limited release, I think it was like in 300 or 400 theaters. That's still pretty sad.
It's really sad, considering it's a movie that some critics have said, like, 5 stars, one of the best films of the year.
And then there's Ebert.
Ebert, who gave it 0.5 star. You figure with that kind of, you know, that kind of publicity, that kind of controversy, people would rush to see what the heck this thing's about. Well,
and it's not even just that Ebert gave it 0.5 star. That's enough in and of itself. But you were saying he went into detail.
Yeah, he went on quite an angry rant I haven't seen since the likes of North. So it's interesting that then more people didn't go, what the heck was that about? Or, you know, considering that this is an art movie with, you know, Naomi Watts and Tim Roth, people wouldn't be more curious about it. The trailer was very interesting and certainly memorable. So considering it opened so poorly, I'm curious if this thing is going to have enough word of mouth to carry it on for a couple more weeks, or if this is it.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I've read up on it a lot. It's one I'll probably just catch on DVD. I just don't need to.
I can't say I even recommend you see it, but, you know, I got to say it certainly has haunted me, and it's certainly a memorable movie. But you know, I'm just amazed that, considering all the hubbub people are making about this movie, do people even say hubbub anymore? I'm just amazed more people didn't go see it. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think Horton's up to like $45 million for the weekend,
which I'm glad. Though I wonder if the people at Fox are disappointed that it's not like $50 or $60 million,
because you know it's March, and as I'm looking out my back window, because we do this in my dining room. Yeah, it's snowing. So I'm guessing we're not the only place that's happened. So, yeah. You know, I'm not surprised. And that's still a really good turnout, I think. Sure. Especially for this time of year, too.
Oh, yeah. And with Easter weekend next week, and I'm sure it'll probably pack them in.
Yes. Yes. Unless they re-release, you know, The Passion or something.
Yes. Oh, wait, sorry. Or if people really want to go, if that many people really do go see Drobit Taylor after all.
For Easter. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about what came out on DVD.
Resurrection of Jesus. Let's go see Drobit Taylor. All right. So, DVD. All right, here we are. This week on DVD, Battlestar Galactica Season 3, the delightful film, which I'll have Dave talk to you about, Enchanted. You finally got to see it just last night or this morning?
This morning.
This morning, huh?
Yes.
Okay, I Am Legend, the regular version, and the 2-disc special edition, piece of crap called Atonement. The Seeker, The Dark is Rising and Falling. Nobody saw it. Bionic Woman, Volume 1. I don't think there'll be a Volume 2.
They should have just called it The Complete Series. I'm just saying.
It's saved him some
I don't know if it's been officially canceled yet, but the word is not good.
Hey, I've seen the pilot, and I'll tell you, the word's not good. Richard Kelly's Southland Tales, which we will get to momentarily. One of the worst titles of all time. One of the worst movies of all time. Love in the Time of Cholera. Justice League, New Frontier.
On HD DVD.
Boo. And then on Criterion Special Edition, Ang Lee's Wonderful, The Ice Storm.
Yes.
And 8 Men Out, the 20th Anniversary Collector's Edition.
Yes, the Ice Storm has been getting a lot of geeks going, ooh, I cannot wait to get this on the Criterion. Because yeah. Criterion just puts out awesome stuff.
They do.
Because, you know, we don't pimp them enough.
Not at all.
No.
I would jump in front of a Criterion bus if I could. And Ice Storm is fantastic. I'm really glad it's getting the special edition treatment.
Absolutely. Enchanted. I'd wanted to see this in the theater, and I missed it. I was able to catch it on DVD, and oh my gosh, this movie's awesome. Like, it's gloriously corny. There's a lot of these movies that try to do the formula of, we're going to do a fractured fairy tale. You know, Shrek the Turd.
Right.
This does it right. Now, granted, this the entire film hinges on Amy Adams and James Marsden playing their parts completely straight. But they do. And it ends up being, I was laughing out loud, but laughing, like, almost enjoy just how corny and fun this movie was. And it was great. I loved it all over. Amy Adams, I mean, I was surprised just how well she could sing, even though we saw what she could do at the Oscars.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was a great movie. Well, we're going to pick it up on Tuesday. There's no question about
it. Very good. And you're still right about the casting. I mean, if it had been like Molly Shannon and Will Ferrell, you know, essentially winking at the audience, it would have been a disaster. It would have been terrible. But because Marsden and Adams made these characters real, if you can believe it, they made those characters real and invested so much into it, they completely sold it.
And Amy, I mean, here's a prime example. Those who have seen it, if Amy Adams doesn't sell herself in this part completely, if she doesn't completely immerse herself in the part, you get to the musical number in Central Park and it's not going to work.
Right.
And somehow you actually buy into it actually working.
Yeah, and that scene is wonderful.
Absolutely. But had it been any other case, people are like, oh, come on, can we get the stupid musical number over with?
Right.
This was very well done, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get to Southland Tales. We're kind of, you know, treading water for stuff, but we just watched it, Barry's second time, my first time, right before the show. So we're going to make that our main topic. We'll get to it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I have nothing to say about anything else on this list. I hope Atonement will go to the $5 bin at Walmart very, very soon.
Like in the next week, yeah.
Oh, that would just be...
You know, you need to learn to like just express yourself when you don't like something.
I hate Atonement.
Before we get into the news, I have to give a couple shout-outs because
yes.
We've been getting in contact with a lot of the Denver community in general. We're going to have the MC from Horror Fest coming to join us in a couple weeks.
Right.
Talk about all the fun and gruesome goodness that's going to happen there. And then we've also heard from Aaron, who actually runs the boards for, I believe it's like a remake of a relaunch of Buck Rogers.
Awesome.
And it's scripts put together. Apparently, there are radio plays, all kinds of stuff. So we're going to be looking into that, maybe partnering with them on some stuff. Ooh. And then we also have to give a quick shout-out to Phoenix Virtual Television. And I've just been getting a lot of support from all over the place. So we appreciate that, everybody.
Thank you, thank you.
Let's move into some news.
Excellent.
We started, what news is there? And then we started, holy crap, there's a lot that happened.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies of all time is getting a redo by MGM. They're looking to do RoboCop.
I think it's a sequel they're talking about doing.
Interesting. Really?
I mean, well, here's the thing. The press release just says current project's underway, RoboCop.
Hmm.
It doesn't say anything. It doesn't say RoboCop remake, RoboCop sequel. It just says RoboCop.
Okay. I imagine that would be a remake from start because, you know, I mean, I own all three of them on DVD, but I mean, who's going to be like, oh, RoboCop 4? Great. I've been waiting for RoboCop 4.
Especially after the great film that RoboCop 3 was.
Although I got to say, I thought RoboCop 3 was still better than 2. I'll still stand by that.
Yeah. Oh, 3 was a fun movie. Don't get me wrong. But
no. It was total.
They're not going to be going back to the Verhoeven.
Yeah. It was still original. BS Bubblegum versus the first one, which is one of the great, I think one of the great science fiction movies of the 80s. But yeah. I imagine it's got to be a remake because who even knows this character anymore who's, you know, around like, say, the 18-year-old mall audience age? Nobody.
No, but, you know, then again, anything with stuff blowing up. And again, you know, if they make a real RoboCop movie and make it rated R, those kids won't be getting it anyway.
Yeah, I can understand them doing a RoboCop sequel if Be Kind Rewind was making, like, Enchanted money. If Be Kind Rewind,
of the $10 million, it just broke, finally.
Exactly. If it made, like, $100 or $210 million and people, like, ran out to see RoboCop, then I would understand, oh, of course, there's going to be RoboCop 4. But, yeah, I imagine MGM's going to start with scratch on this one.
And that's my concerns. They're going to make a PG-13 RoboCop.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And you know what? Again, this is a remake that we don't need it. Paul Verhoeven did it perfectly the first time. RoboCop 1 is still a very potent political and social satire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, since we're talking about the 80s, we may as well stay there really quick.
Yay!
Apparently, David Fincher has talked about the film he's going to do next. And, you know, I've never been a big fan of these movies. Haven't seen them. I'll have to now because if it's Fincher, I have to see it. Apparently, he's going to be working on the next heavy metal movie.
All right.
Now, you've seen the original.
I have. I have mixed feelings about it. You know,
it's essentially a lot of violence and sex.
A lot. Well, it's an anthology fantasy sci-fi animated movie with lots of sex and violence. Parts of it are thrilling. In fact, there is a segment about a flying cabbie, who drives a flying car in the future, and he picks up a girl that's a lot like The Fifth Element. A lot of people
have I was going to say.
Yeah. Well, I've heard people say, oh, it's a ripoff of heavy metal. And, you know, there may or may not be some merit to that. But heavy metal is such a mixed bag. There's some terrific, amazing sequences. There are some visually beautiful moments, and then there's stuff where just like, okay, animated boobies, okay, great. But
okay then,
yeah, but it, you know, it earns its cult following because it is a very well done animated movie, and certainly the good parts overweigh the bad parts. And I can't say I was really waiting for another heavy metal sequel because we had the last one, I think it was Heavy Metal 2000.
Yes.
So yeah, Heavy Metal 3000, okay, bring it on. And hey, David Fincher, I'm there.
That's the thing. It's like with me with Bryan Singer, you know. I don't know. And every time he proves me wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, what have you got next?
Well, I guess just to rehash what I wrote about in the site, this week, two of the biggest geek trailers of the year came out, the Incredible Hulk trailer and the Lost Boys, the Tribe trailers. These are two trailers I think everybody was looking to see just because everyone was wondering, are these movies going to suck or not? The trailers would be the first indication of that since, you know, the Incredible Hulk is a redo of a movie that
just a few years old
did not do very well, so they're essentially starting from scratch and rewriting the rules on this one. And Lost Boys is one of the most beloved cult horror hit movies of all time, finally decades later getting a sequel
with Corey Feldman.
Apparently Corey Haim is in it too, although he didn't pop up in the teaser trailer.
Yeah, there's a whole other video linked to that about how he got screwed out of being in it or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I gotta say, just briefly about these two trailers, the Incredible Hulk trailer, I wasn't blown away by it. It was it looks like Edward Norton is spot on. The special effects look good, but it just doesn't look like a great movie to me, honestly.
I don't know. I'm waiting. Again, Edward Norton, I'll see anything he's in.
Sure. Yeah. And as far as Lost Boys, the Tribe goes, at best, it looks like the kind of movie you'd see on the Sci-Fi Channel at like 1 a.m.
At best.
Yeah, that's being very generous.
Let's get back to the Hulk really quick, because you mentioned, you know, we talk about Edward Norton. There's been a lot of talk about him fighting about how he wants to edit the film.
Right.
Now, apparently there was something that went on with American History X similarly.
Yeah.
What happened with that? Because it's something I never read about.
Tony Kaye, the director of that movie, had a very specific cut in mind, and Edward Norton and New Line Cinema sided against Tony Kaye. So Tony Kaye wanted to basically not only just say up yours to New Line and take his name off the picture, but instead of putting directed by Alan Smithy, he was going to change it to directed by Humpty Dumpty. And he essentially got thrown out of Hollywood for it. He did a documentary film this year, but otherwise he hasn't done anything since. It really kind of badmouthed him. And Edward Norton, you know, as extraordinary as an actor he is, he has kind of a reputation for kind of going against the grain, and you know, it's made very public. A few years ago, it was known that he only was in The Italian Job because he was contractually obligated to appear in it. He did not want to be in that movie, so he kind of did that film begrudgingly, even though it really helped his career because it was a big fat hit. So this is another case where he's, you know, essentially crusading against what he believes to be the right version of the movie. And, you know, considering how well American History X turned out, I would certainly side with the guy. And I certainly hope his instincts are for the best of this movie. But, considering we don't know really what the movie's about.
Okay.
Well, it's about a big green hulky man. But other than that, we don't really know. So we'll just have to see the film to see if he's on the side of right or not.
Okay. Interesting. Going from an interesting filmmaker to another interesting filmmaker, it is official. Pixar and Brad Bird are going to be making a live action movie called 1906. It's looking like a bit of a thriller about a guy back then who is looking into his father's death and ends up finding out a whole bunch of corruption stuff that ends up leaving the city open to the fire that happens in 1906.
Fantastic. Sounds great.
It depends on who was making this. It's Brad Bird, so it could be someone reading the phone book, and he'd find a way to make it entertaining.
Sure. Well, I remember like when Mike Judge was going to break out to, you know, branch out to do live action movies, and everyone was like, "Oh, it's the guy who did Beavis and Butthead. How good could it be?" You know, we have Office Space, one of the premier cult movies of all time, and a cult film in the making, Idiocracy, a film that I honestly really like. So, hey,
It has its moments, that's for sure.
It does. And Brad Bird wants to make a live action movie. I say, God bless him. I hope it turns out great.
Absolutely. Well, I'll let you go ahead with the next one. I got two left, so.
Okay. Well, my last one, and I definitely want to hear what you have to say about this. You brought this up to my attention. Uh-oh. About the Harry Potter films.
Oh,
apparently,
yes.
Harry Potter 7. Is that the Half-Blood Prince? Or
The Deathly Hallows.
Thank you, Deathly
Half-Blood
Hallows.
Prince, I believe, is next. I haven't read any of the books. I have a very significant gripe about this.
Sure. And which is that Harry Potter 7 is reportedly going to be broken into two films.
Yes. I have a very specific reason. The directors come out, the actors have come out, everyone's come out and said, this is one giant story that wraps everything up. We can't cut anything. From what I've talked to, from people who've read the books, a lot of stories that were cut will have answers. Mm. So why couldn't you extend those so I get the more complete story and as well do the cash grab?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite ring true.
It doesn't, because if this was honest, I mean,
Warner Brothers, book apparently was even longer than the final book.
Right.
And Order of the Phoenix. And so that should very easily could have been two movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying every movie should have been, you know, split up into two, because then we'd be looking at, you know, 14 years of movies. But, you know, when you just can't make that distinction there.
Right. Right. Well, the idea, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, if they were being honest about this, Warner Brothers would release like the extended cut of each Harry Potter movie the way the New Line did with the Lord of the Rings films. The thing is, of course, is that this cash cow, once it's over, it's over. And I think this is a way, you know, hey, good business decision on the part of Warner Brothers. They're going to have an extremely long movie cut into two films so they can extend the box office gross of
Only
Harry Potter.
Only if Tarantino's directing. I'm sorry. No.
Do we know who's directing this one?
Oh, it's the same guy who did Order of the Phoenix.
Is it Mike Newell?
I think so.
I'm not sure. Anyway.
But I'm not saying all of them should have been two movies, but if the last book was so stinking long they had to cut so much out of it, why couldn't you make that one two movies? Mm. So you would have extended it by two films. Granted, no one's getting younger, so you probably want to put a kibosh on this at some point. But I can't believe that they're not going to be cutting some pretty significant amounts of stuff out of the final movies.
Yes, and Dumbledore needs to be gay in all of these Potter movies. They need to go back from the start and explicitly, you know...
We're not a slash show, man. We're not going to talk about like Dumbledore and Hagrid or something, because no, that's not... We're not going there.
No.
Finally...
Just joking.
Yes. And that there goes all the people who started listening last week.
Wait, screw this crap.
Finally, for the foreign film geeks, apparently someone wants to remake Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. First, you had Nicolas Cage possibly doing an Old Boy remake. Hmm. And now Charlize Theron wants to make Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
Hmm.
There really is no more creativity in Hollywood, is there?
She has shown in a handful of movies, including last year's In the Valley of Allah, which I think is her best performance, that she is an excellent actress. But she's also shown that her instincts go towards movies like, well, I don't know, Aeon Flux and Head in the Clouds and Mighty Joe Young. And when she goes the commercial route like that, I think she needs either better guidance. This is not something that needs to be done. Just like Old Boy, you know, with all these
any
movies,
of the Vengeance trilogy.
What are you going to do? Make them more extreme? You can't possibly do that. And they don't need to be American stories because they are specifically stories made for their countries by their people. And, you know, these movies have the excellent Chinese slant that they have.
Korean
slant.
Dude.
I'm sorry.
It's all good.
I knew it was in Japanese, but I apologize. Yeah, these are excellent Korean thrillers that don't need Americanizations.
On the upside, you hope that if it's done well, it brings more people's attention to the other revenge films, and just they discover them on their own at that point. That's the only upside I can see of this. Then again, look at the remake of Japan's One Missed Call.
Sure.
Did that make anything? Did anyone see that?
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be a castrated version of that because, I mean, Old Boy is perfect. They don't need to touch Old Boy. They don't need to touch this trilogy. They really don't.
They really don't. They don't at all. And that's all that I've got for news, although I did see a movie last night that we forgot to mention.
Yes.
The glory... Okay, I can't even say glorious. The quote-unquote director... I really don't know that he's earned that title. Uwe Boll's In the Name of the King... A Dungeon Siege Story. The film that at the end the credits say an Uwe Boll production directed by Uwe Boll.
Mm. Just in case you don't know who's at the helm of this.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, like you're going to forget who to blame for this monstrosity. It's 2 hours long, and I told you, I've seen like better storylines and stuff in made-for-TV movies from the 80s.
It's 2 hours long, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, it hurts.
Man.
It's awful. I mean, horrible misplacement. Matthew Lillard, I wanted to like shiv.
He's
in a bad way. Yes.
Wow.
And
who's not in it?
I Sarah Jessica Parker. I don't know.
Oh, okay. There's one.
But I mean, oh, it is awful. Ron Perlman is criminally underused. The exposition pieces are awful. The quote unquote inspirational bits from the leaders saying, you know, trying to rouse the troops and they start cheering. You're like, oh, I thought he just started talking. I'm sorry. Cause he didn't say a single rousing thing in there. The one shining spot, as always, was Jason Statham. He really did what he could with the part.
Hmm.
The lines were pretty bad, but he pulled it off well. He was the only one who had decent action pieces. The action was awful. Like remember when you were a kid and did slow-mo sword fights?
Yeah.
That's the action in this movie. I would love, you know, I'd love to say that, you know, people just pick on Uwe Boll for no reason. Yeah, no. They're very basic things. Like there's a spot where Ron Perlman and a guy are stuck on a rope and drop down into a river. Unlike every other movie that has half a brain, you show them dropping in the water. Oh, look, they fell in the water. Ha ha ha. That's funny. No, it cuts off halfway before they hit the water and it cuts to a scene of them coming up out of the river. That's how much sense this movie makes.
That's awful. So is Ray Liotta going to get a Golden Raspberry Award for Best Supporting Actor next year, you think?
You know, he was hamming it up and having fun. If you were to pick someone, wow, who in that movie would have the probably Burt Reynolds as the king. No, it'd be like Matthew Lillard as the Duke. He was awful in that movie.
Did Christina Loken at least keep her clothes on for this one?
She did. And she kind of played the warrior princess badass type person, which was great. She did great in that particular role. But yeah, I can't.
Man.
There's a reason why we call it the Honorary UVA Bowl Worst Movie of the Year Award.
Man. It was in theaters for 5 seconds. I wanted to see it, but it was gone before I got the chance.
Oh, no, you don't. Believe me, you don't. Wow. Okay. Well, let's take a quick break here, and then we will come back and... What are we talking about? Oh, yeah, we're talking about Southland Tales. Cool. All right, we'll be right back.
Sue Ellen Greenblatt is a real person, not an internet celebrity. So we've enlisted Billy Flynn and the Vicar to help her tell her story.
Geek Radio Daily gives me geeky news about movies, new DVD releases, even comics and gaming.
Geek Radio Daily makes me feel special.
Ah, yeah.
Womanly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episodes are just 15 minutes, perfect for my commute or for just geeking out while I'm at the office.
Mm. All in one concise love package.
Ooh, the package, baby.
Uh-huh. And the best part is that it's a daily cast, so I'm always in the loop.
Sometimes I listen to it out of the bath, put on little outfits.
It makes me want to invite all my friends over to show how refreshed I feel.
A slumber party, baby.
What? That's not what I said.
Get out the
chocolate mousse.
Duct tape.
Oh, get out of here, you freaks.
Geek Radio Daily. One 15-minute podcast provides 15% of the USDA recommended daily allowance of geeky goodness. Subscribe through iTunes or visit geekradiodaily.com. This is Ray.
Sup?
Let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
Damn.
Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
Who knows how long we get to play that trailer, that promo, so I figured we should play it as often as possible.
As often and often as possible.
Yes, just a quick programming note. As far as Geek Radio Daily goes, we love the Vicar and Billy Flynn. They're awesome guys. If you listen to podcasts with your kids, you might want to listen to this one on its own first. Fortunately, it's a 15-minute show, but it can run a little mature at times. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But just, you know, with the new listeners, it's better to give warnings than, they didn't just say what I think they said.
If it was TV, there would be the little MA at the upper right-hand corner of the screen.
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe TV 14.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well, since we're scraping for the bottom of the barrel for this week, Southland Tales.
Wow, that is not a vote of confidence right there.
No. I meant just that we were looking for something to talk about, and that's what we came up with.
Yes.
Although, yeah, I'm not a fan of the movie.
Yeah, and you know, you're not going to be alone there, but I know I'm not alone there in saying that I think I recognize the stuff that's there, but I'll admit this is not a perfect movie. But I think there's a huge cult following that's about to come out. When this thing hits DVD next week.
Yeah, on Tuesday, two days.
There's a lot of people who are going to see it really for the first time ever because, honestly, this movie got one of the worst theatrical releases considering the cast involved in this movie. Because, I mean, this is the new film from The Rock and the new film from the director of Donnie Darko. This movie barely played in theaters. So I think people are going to discover it. Some people are going to really, really hate it and use it as a coaster. And some people are going to start their own cult with this film.
There you go. And you know, it is surprising because this shouldn't have gotten a theatrical release. Like Be Kind Rewind, there's just no way, like a wide theatrical release.
Yeah.
It merited an art house release for sure, at bare minimum. If you're looking for Donnie Darko Part 2, all I'm going to say is you may not be completely disappointed.
Yeah.
I kind of was. The performances overall were really
kind
good.
Kind of? I don't think it was kind of. I think you were disappointed.
Okay, yes, I definitely was disappointed. I'm not going to say that it was an awful film. It was very disjointed. I thought Donnie Darko made more sense. The parts that it didn't explain, I'm not talking about the director's cut, I'm talking about the regular cut. It kind of left a little more to your imagination to be able to think about and just accept certain things just didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. This one tried to explain things and then they didn't make sense of the way that they talked about them. So that was where my issue was.
Let's talk about the way you previewed it, because I loaned you the three graphic novels.
Yes.
Because the idea is that the movie is episodes 4, 5, and 6 of the Southland Tales, and the comic book version, which I bought and I loaned to Dave, it's episodes 1, 2, and 3, so you're all caught up in the story.
if you can call it that.
Yeah, yes, it helps at all.
It is three separate graphic novels. I will say it definitely helped because you understood who the characters were. If I'd walked into this movie cold, I'd be like, who, what, I, huh? Even more so.
Sure.
I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
The performances were really good. The Rock was really called on to, it's Dwayne Johnson. He's not going by The Rock anymore, so that's I'll right, call him by right. his proper name.
Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson. He was called on to give a very unique and off-kilter performance, and I think he did it beautifully. I think, surprisingly enough, Sherry O'Terry was awesome in this movie. Because I told you, it's like she's the cheerleader from the Saturday Night Live sketches on Roid Rage. So,
yes,
very entertaining in that aspect. Sarah Michelle Gellar was kind of there. Yeah, okay.
So she was for Sherry O'Terry, but not for
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. No, I'm not going to say that she was bad in it. Yeah. It was just kind of like the character was just kind of there. I shouldn't say she was just there. It was the character. The character played more of a role in the comics than it did in the movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
She was a central character in the comics, for crying out loud. But it was kind of surprising seeing who all they popped up in this thing. I mean, Sean William Scott was pretty interesting in this.
Yeah,
I mean, he had to give an even more disjointed performance, to pardon the pun there.
Sure.
How do you forget that you have Christopher Lambert in your movie?
Yeah. Like, even I was telling Dave, it's like, it's the second time I've seen it. I forget that Christopher Lambert's in it. Kevin Smith is in it, although he's in such heavy, heavy makeup.
He looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, like an old, old, gone to seed Philip Seymour Hoffman. If you don't know what Kevin Smith's voice sounds like, you won't even realize he's in the movie.
No, not at all.
I love Justin Timberlake's performance in the movie.
He's really pushing himself.
He has a real, real edge in his eye. There's a real tinge of craziness to that performance.
Between
really,
that and he was the one bright point of the Love Guru trailer. The one highlight. Point
the one,
you know, he's really carving a spot out for himself as an actor, and I think this definitely added to it. Mm-hmm. For certain. I think a lot of it was my problem was the story. It didn't feel like there really was much of a story.
Oh really? I thought there was too much of a story. That's interesting you said.
Well, and that's how it came across, though. I mean, there's so many different things you're coming across. It's like, are you gonna get to something at some point here? Until like the last 15 minutes of the movie, it seems like a meandering mess to me.
Sure. No, that is a completely valid criticism. This movie needs freaking traffic control. There's too many characters bumping into each other throughout the movie, and considering that the main characters, you know, are supposed to be Dwayne Johnson, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Sean William Scott character, and you've got all these other characters, you've got all these militia groups, you've got
John Lovitz.
Yeah, you got John Lovitz, you got John Larroquette. I mean, you got all these people running around, you've got this mystical ice cream truck that everybody's looking after.
You did bring up one very funny point. They make militias look like sewing circles. Like, literally. Yeah. It's hilarious. At the end, you're like, what? Really?
Yeah, sewing circles awesome. and like college frats. It's like everybody's just like high-fiving each other and shooting people. Yeah.
It's you know, I'm not going to say it was an awful movie again, because there were a lot of points that were really good in it. Mm-hmm. There's the car commercial. Do we want to spoil that?
No, we'll save it for... Yeah.
The car commercial is something that has
it's
to be seen.
It's pretty bizarre. You've never seen this before.
It almost... Several times throughout the film, at one point, when... with Justin Timberlake, I was like, did I start watching Across the Universe? Because yeah. There's a scene that's very much like that. It seemed a lot like he was trying to channel Terry Gilliam in many ways. Mm-hmm. That's how the film wanted to be, I thought. I didn't think it was wholly successful, but an admirable effort. Because if you're going to pick someone to try to emulate, that's like the last person you want to try, because wow.
Yeah, it's a mixture of the terrible and the brilliant, I think. And what I think really works is the movie's depiction of the future as right now. I love the idea of the internet owned by the government. Don't get me wrong, I don't want that. I love the idea.
There have been bills that have been tried to be passed with that anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's really intriguing the way the movie expresses that. The whole notion of soldiers with guns like perched high above Venice Beach just waiting to shoot people. I mean, you know, it's like everybody's paranoid fantasy. And in fact, like, there's a scene where one of the government workers, like, she has duty where she has to watch people in the bathroom because there's like bathroom cameras all over the world. Yeah, I remember as a kid being afraid of that, being like in the John, like, is somebody watching me? And this movie like completely taps into that. We were saying, like, gosh, this movie, you know, it takes place in 2008. It's dealing with an election year and all the shenanigans of that. And then you've got, you know, gas prices going up. Like, huh, this movie's... On one hand, it's complete nonsense, but on the other hand, it's a little prophetic there.
On one hand, you've got the wag the dog effect, where the movie came out, and then you're like, holy crap, this actually happened.
Yeah, it actually happened.
And the other side of it is, you know, if you tend to have very conservative viewpoints, be prepared to be offended. That's all I'm going to say.
But I think they played fair, though, because
I think they did.
Both sides of the political spectrum are portrayed as total nutcases in this movie. This is a movie full of mad, nutty people.
I thought it was hilarious that they had Hillary Clinton and Joe Lieberman running together.
On the same ticket, yeah. And, I mean, overall, I mean, I think what Kelly was trying to do was kind of portray the Book of Revelations as like a 9/11, post-9/11 pop culture meltdown of a thing. And it's, you know, I think some of it works. Some of it's really intriguing, but... A lot of it just does not come together. I love the music. I love the song score as well as the music score by Moby. And I think there's some great scenes. I love the apocalyptic opening of a home movie camera capturing this apocalypse that happened in Texas.
Well done.
Really creepy. I loved all the musical numbers and all the nutty stuff that happens in the last 25, 30 minutes.
It almost turns into a slapstick movie.
It really does. It's very comical, and yet it's very somber, and it keeps going going back and forth through that. But yeah, there are some terrible scenes in this movie, and I don't think there's anything worse than, like, there's a scene where this guy gets his hand cut off. It feels like it's from another movie altogether. It's like,
where did that come from? Probably the part that made me turn on the movie the most is there is a scene near the end where it turns into exposition time. And it's something that I had figured out like 10 minutes beforehand. And I'm like, oh, so this is blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to spoil it. And you're like, And then someone says, so if this happens and this and this and this, I'm like, I just figured... Give me some credit here, please, please. And that's something that Donnie Darko did. It really didn't try to explain anything. And it's almost like that was like too many people complained about that. So that was him trying to throw those people a bone. But I think it really got in the way of the movie.
So, you know, that's an excellent point, Dave, because so much of this film is really like, you know, what it means to you. I mean, the whole movie is like a Rorschach test. Like, this is going to mean something to you, something not to you. But then like the very end of the movie, yeah, they're kind of over-explaining the scenario. And it would be like you're saying, like somebody in Donnie Darko going, well, Donnie's going through a time travel passage now, and therefore Donnie's going to sacrifice himself. It's like, you know, you don't want that. You don't need that. And that's what made that film so special. And this movie didn't necessarily need that. You're right.
And one thing you say that there are so many different plot points, one thing to it that we've talked about beforehand, you can almost put this in the same group as Donnie Darko, as The Fountain, stuff like that. Because there are so many storylines there, you couldn't concentrate on any character and really try to root for a character. You're just kind of like, well, let's see what happens next. I felt very, you know, very much as an observer watching this film as opposed to getting emotionally involved at all.
Yeah.
So that's probably, for me, if something doesn't grab me on some sort of emotional level, then eh.
You're absolutely right. Donnie Darko had a lot of heart. This movie has interesting characters, no question. And
absolutely.
Some great performances, great scenes, but it doesn't have a center and it doesn't have heart, I don't think.
Yeah, and John Lovitz.
But it does have John Lovitz with silvery white hair playing a killer vigilante racist cop, which it's as bizarre as it sounds.
And all I could say was, I don't think he has that much hair. So I mean, I'm not going to tell someone not to see it. But if you're a big, huge fan of Donnie Darko and the abstract kind of film, go for it, have a blast or hate it, whatever. You know, I don't think you'll be disappointed watching it.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be that adventurous, I'd probably avoid it like the plague.
Okay, I would give it a little more praise just to say that for those of you who have to see the new film from Donnie Darko, director Richard Kelly, you must see this film. The discussions it is going to bring up
absolutely
are very valuable, and certainly there are great, great scenes throughout the course of the movie. The movie as a whole is a very mixed bag. This is a film that would have been, I think, close to a masterpiece at 90 minutes. At over 2 hours, it's all over the place, and you really kind of pick and choose. And certainly the next time I see it, if I just end up seeing the same cut that we just watched today, I would probably just kind of jump over some scenes just so I can get to the cool stuff.
Yeah. Now, isn't there like a 3-hour cut of this originally?
Yeah, apparently the version that they showed at the Cannes Film Festival 2 years ago now was much, much longer. Jeanine Garofalo, I was telling you, she had a big, big part. You only see her very fleetingly in this movie, even though she's still listed in the end credits. But apparently, yeah, it was a much longer, much more meandering movie. And apparently audiences and critics turned on that one too. So
wow. I mean, it was like a 3 or 4 hour cut, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was long.
I think it was about three and a half hours, yeah.
So yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure we'll see it at some point, especially if it does well on DVD.
Yeah, and I predict it will. I think this is going to be a big cult film, although, you know, it's going to be like Boondock Saints. There's some people are going to be all over it, and there's other people are going to be like, that doesn't deserve to be a cult film.
Never mind. Okay, cool. All right, well, let's move on to what's hitting theaters this week and get out of here, because we're going to be doing bringing back the film snob this week.
That's right. Next week in theaters.
crap and more crap?
Essentially. Let's see. I got Never Back Down. Was that this week?
No, that was this week.
That was this week. Okay.
Yeah, so Drill Bit.
Okay, so yeah. Drill Bit Taylor, the new film co-written by Seth Rogen, starring Owen Wilson and Leslie Mann. Shudder with Joshua Jackson, another remake. Is it a remake?
Or I have no idea, but it looks so awful.
It's an Americanized Japanese horror film, essentially, and it, why? We don't need it.
We'll get back to that, because there's something very specific I have to say about that
one. Okay. Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns with Angela Bassett. You know, I got to say, I really liked Why Did I Get Married, so I'm going to give this Tyler Perry movie a shot, even though cool. Madea's in it. I hate that he brings back Madea. You don't need Madea. In limited release, you've got Under the Same Moon, and sneak preview of David Schwimmer's directed Simon Pegg, the gorgeous Tandy Newton in Run, Fat Boy, Run.
His feature
film debut?
Feature-length film debut, yes.
Is it, though?
Yes. I looked it up, and he's okay. Done like some made-for-TV stuff.
I only asked that just because I'm not familiar with the directorial career of
David Schwimmer. I looked it up just to make sure. And okay, cool. All I can say is if there's a sneak preview of Run, Fat Boy, Run, go see it. It is so much fun. We'll talk about it more in depth next week, or in a couple weeks,
I guess. But you really dug it.
I dug it a lot. Actually, we're going to be taking a couple weeks off, probably. So I guess I should talk about it now. I have one solitary complaint and gripe with this movie. It seems like every comedy these days has to have a gross-out gag. And so they had to have one. But it just kind of felt like it had to be there. Although it was very funny, don't get me wrong, it was hilarious.
Is it the scene between Hank Azaria and Simon Pegg that we see in the trailer?
No,
it's worse than that. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's I'll tell you about it off air.
Okay.
And
great, can't wait.
Oh yeah, it's not like Death at a Funeral or Super Bad Gross, but it is kind of gross. However, it was written by Michael Ian Black of 9-1-1 and all that fun stuff, and Simon Pegg. So Simon Pegg is awesome in it. And here's the thing. Not only is he willing to make a complete fool of himself when he humps a lingerie store mannequin's hand.
Oh, my gosh.
And actually, he doesn't hump. He has a rash from running. He hasn't run in a long time. So he's, like, trying to itch it, and it looks really bad.
Gotcha.
The interactions with his son in the movie are – it's night and day. Of course, he's going to pull off the screwy fun stuff, as we've seen he can do. But he also pulls off a very convincing dramatic portion playing a father. I think he did an outstanding part of that. Dylan Moran is hilarious in it, who played David in Shaun of the Dead and was in the show Black Books and tons of stuff. Well worth checking out. I can't recommend it more than enough. Bleah. And Hank Azaria is awesome in it too.
Okay. Is date movie?
Yes, absolutely.
Really? Great. And,
okay. You know how I feel about Tandy Newton. Not a fan.
Man, I'm a huge Tandy
Just because
fan.
I have yet to see something I've liked in her.
Okay, that's fair. Sure.
This is that movie.
Okay.
I really liked her in this film.
All right.
She was very likable, and it felt like a very human film. You know, it wasn't like setting up good guy, bad guy, although it kind of does at one point. But it feels much more naturalistic overall. So yeah, well worth checking out. And then what was that last film that you were talking about before?
Under the Same Moon in limited release with America Ferrara.
The movie that when I saw the trailer, I'm like, they're making an Ilian Gonzalez movie? You've seen the trailer, right?
I have, yes.
You can see where I'd go with that.
I do. In fact, honestly, I thought that crossed my mind too. Yeah, America Ferrara, excuse me. And the release date for this one has been all over the map. I don't know how good it is or isn't, but
And then finally we've got Shudder, which I kid you not, like 2 weeks ago I was flipping through the TV, saw an episode of The Ghost Whisperer. It was the same story pretty much. So there you go. Let's go ahead and talk about DVDs for next week, because there's good stuff hitting next week.
One more question.
Oh, yes.
Run, Fat Boy, Run, Hot Fuzz.
Completely different films.
Mm.
Can't really.
Can't compare?
Not really.
Can't do the comparison game? No?
Not really, because Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead were, yes, they were very strong on story, but they were also written pretty much as what they were, as a zombie movie, as an action movie. This is, another genre, if you will. It was just very well done. It has a completely different feel from the other two films.
Cool. Okay. I will see.
Yes, yes. All right, let's talk about DVDs for next week. What we're going to buy, if anything.
Well, Mark Foster's adaptation of The Kite Runner, now on DVD, got a very mixed reactions when it was in theaters. One of my favorite films from last year, Frank Darabont's adaptation of Stephen King's The Mist, available in a single and two-disc special edition.
Which I will have to see.
And apparently one of the featurettes is that you get to see the movie in black and white as Darabont envisioned. Oh, that's so cool.
Very cool.
Yes. Speaking of disturbing and creepy, David Lynch's Lost Highway will be available on DVD. This is one of...
That doesn't even begin to cover this film.
Nightmare Fuel doesn't even begin to describe this movie.
When you have people, oh goodness, see, we may be getting younger listeners in the throes of passion to Marilyn Manson videos. you know, you just that's all you need to know.
That's really, for starters. This is a messed up movie, and you know, and I consider myself a David Lynch fan, but even for him, this is one of the meanest, nastiest films he's ever made. And
So if you see it at the store, hey, I'm gonna. Oh, it's a David Lynch. It has Bill Pullman in it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna check it. Yeah, just think about that, and then decide if you really want to see it.
Exactly. Approach with caution. Yeah. Blue Velvet is a feel good movie compared to Lost Highway. So moving on, Wrist Cutter's a Love Story, a movie I hated this movie.
You put it on the list just so you could say that.
Yes. Also with Shannon Sossaman of One to Miss Call Infamy. On the other hand, the other side of the spectrum, Bonnie and Clyde, the ultimate 3-disc special collector's edition or the 2-disc special edition. So really, no matter what, you can't go wrong with Bonnie and Clyde.
You're getting your Bonnie and Clyde fix.
This is one of the great movie. And then back all the way to the very, very bottom, scraping the bottom of the bottom, the remake of April Fool's Day. Going straight to DVD in your face. I love it because this stupid movie was supposed to be in theaters, and it's a remake of my favorite slasher movie of all time. I love it that it's so bad, it's going straight to DVD purgatory where it will languish.
Be in the $5 bin in about the next month or so?
In a few weeks, yes. And I love that because that means that the original still has credence, and it won't be like Black Christmas. People are like, I hate a Black Christmas. I'm like, no, the original.
Or the upcoming prom night.
Yeah, exactly. Although, well, the original prom night was so terrible. I'm hoping
this improves.
I'm hoping this will be at least a little better. Yeah.
Gotcha. Would you rather see Dance the Dead?
I would have to go with April Fool's Day.
Oh, no. I mean between that and prom night.
Oh.
Since they're prom nights and people get killed.
Prom night then. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll probably see the remake of prom night just because I'm curious if it could possibly sink any lower than the original. And the original even had Leslie Nielsen and Jamie Lee Curtis, and it's still a bad movie.
Wow.
Really bad.
Okay, then. Well. All right, well, if you'd like to send us an email with any feedback, you can email us Barry, Dave, Josh, Ethan, podcast@screengeeks.com, any or all of those. Let us know what you think of the show. Stay tuned. We're also going to be posting up a Screen Geeks film snob for the week. We'll save what we're talking about for when we get there. But finally, instead of doing our usual outro music, I just finally beat Portal because I'm a big nerd like that on the 360. So I had to... give a little ode and shout out to Jonathan Colton's great ode and strangeness. So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This was a triumph. I'm making a note here. Huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction. Aperture Science. We do what we must because we can. For the good of all of us, except the ones who are dead. But there's no sense.